This is What Does It Profit? And I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. Each week in this podcast, I'll talk to some of the leading thinkers and researchers, entrepreneurs and executives about things like conscious capitalism, sustainability, and business ethics. Things that feel all the more urgent as we as a planet face enormous challenges. Climate change, pandemics, and demands for social reform. Many of these challenges brought about, some would argue, by capitalism. Each episode, each guest will bring me a little closer to finding out, what does it profit? For those of you who don't know, I'm here in Washington, D.C., political ground zero. Our studio is just a few blocks from the White House and just down the street from Congress. We're in the swamp. Yes, if you didn't know it, D.C. actually was built on a real swamp. Or in the soup, or in the thick of all of it, where a good number of my friends and neighbors make their living doing politics. So how is an ex-banker and a business ethicist to survive, at least during the election season? My way of dealing with this time of year is to find the intersections. Where do business and politics intersect? Is it at K Street, which is the main drag here in Washington for lobbyists, or at Wall Street, the metaphorical homeland of traders, or at Main Street, well, where the rest of us are? My take is that politics is baked into business DNA. Our conversation today and the conversation in our next episode are going to shed a light on a lot of this. As we get going, I think it's important, though, that we get a few things out of the way. First, we're not going to the dark side, the dark money issue. Let's just get it out there. It's that untraceable corporate money raised by nonprofit organizations that give obscene amounts of money to influence elections. Well, why not? Well, because not that it's not interesting or terrifying, but I think that folks like Director Kimberly Reed do an amazing job telling this story. I urge all of you to watch her award-winning documentary called Dark Money that's available for download now on PBS.org or Amazon Prime Video or Apple iTunes. No, that wasn't a commercial for Dark Money. It was just me saying it's definitely worth a watch, particularly if you're interested in this issue. And secondly, I'm a pragmatist with the DNA of a teacher. Today, we're going to have a conversation about how corporations engage in the political process and what this means to us as investors. Now listen to this.
Your vote is bigger than the color of your state.
It is a revolution in motion.
Cast your promise.
Cast your promise. Cast your vote.
Cast your vote.
But vote.
This message and the hashtag Vote About It campaign is brought to you by my favorite jeans company, Levi's. No, that wasn't a commercial either. We put the link to the video in the show notes because you have to see the visuals. Levi's and other brands are using their corporate influence and power to promote a call to action. But Levi's isn't alone, and this isn't the first time companies have done something like this. But, you know, I'm still in awe by the ballsy tactics of Patagonia, who sells a line of shorts with an inside tag with their own call to action that I actually had to fact check. Yes, that tag says, "Vote the assholes out." Well, today we're talking corporate politics, not the backstabbing, ladder-climbing kind of politics, but the tactics that companies use to participate in the political process and what it means for us in terms of our own portfolios. This episode runs a little long, but it's worth it because in the back half, we're going to have a sneak peek into my portfolio. And let's welcome to the What Does It Profit podcast, Dan Eckstein from Sajak Public Affairs. Dan, how are you?
I'm great, Dawn. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you.
I cannot believe you have found time to talk to us in the midst of political primetime.
I'm three cups of coffee in, and I got up early this morning, so I am firing at all synapses.
All right. Well, we're going to catch you while you're fresh. Dan is responsible for building and managing corporate political programs. And we thought that this might be a fun conversation to have on a business show. Dan, tell us more about what it means to do the work you do.
Well, again, thank you for the opportunity. So I've been a partner with Sajak now for close to 9 years. And essentially what we do is we help companies and associations that advocate, that operate, obviously, in heavily regulated industries, I guess, expand or help amplify their voice to policymakers and candidates throughout the United States. Specifically, what does that mean? We work with companies to help them build their, essentially, their internal marketing programs to help educate and encourage their employees and or members to participate in the political or electoral process. That may mean, you know, learning about issues of interest to the company or association or industry. It may mean signing a petition or making a call to a member of Congress or a state official. And it also could mean supporting their organization's political action committee with a voluntary contribution, of which those organizations then aggregate those funds and make contributions to candidates that are running for office.
Well, I have to give a nod of congratulations for helping to increase our vocabulary. SAJAC, public affairs, sagacious,
yes.
Showing keen mental discernment and I guess good judgment. And it seems like that's what you all are trying to do. You're trying to educate the internal business community within a given business on how their involvement can help promote corporate objectives. Did I get that right?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure as we all have been living through these, as we all say now, unprecedented times, and it is a very sort of unique period in sort of our history in America. And it's, we're in the midst of a very turbulent election year, but I am a firm believer in our system of government. I'm very biased towards our republic, and the ability for individuals and organizations to, have a voice is not only part of our rights as, citizens, but, frankly, I would view those that don't participate, whether by voting or by supporting candidates or officials in any capacity that they can, I think that would be a shame. So I think fundamentally my role is to help encourage more people to take part in the political process. So I'm really excited about this podcast, because I do think there's a very strong intersection between the important role that organizations have, companies have, in obviously offering products and services to the market or to their consumers, and also the ways in which they can participate, in the political process as well.
Okay, Dan, I have known you for a lot of years, and I'm not going to admit how many, but we got to know each other in conjunction with your role as the political action committee at JP Morgan. So let's take, as an example, a financial institution. What are the kinds of things that a financial institution would care about within the political domain, and then how do they find a place? Because I think of like a menu of things that companies can get engaged in. So let's walk through that menu.
Okay, well, the first thing I would say is, my observation and my experience working with, for example, when I was at JP Morgan Chase, and I have had the opportunity to work with other large financial institutions, is, they're really not taking political stances. They're not really sort of getting involved in the electoral system or our political system from a partisan perspective. As you know, Dawn, because of our previous work experience, banks are probably one of the most heavily regulated industries in America, as they should be, at a local, state, and federal level. And candidates, policymakers, as noble as they are in their pursuit to sort of make sure that they understand the issues that affect their constituents and the markets, they're all not experts on technical matters as it relates to banking policy or tax policy or fiscal policy, financial services issues, privacy, the flow of data, safety soundness issues. And so they do rely, I believe, on building credible relationships with, organizations, companies like a JP Morgan Chase to understand the, JP Morgan Chase's perspective, if you will, on technical matters as relates to, regulations that it would affect them and their customers. And that doesn't mean that JP Morgan Chase obviously will get its way on a particular issue, but at least they would like to have their perspective heard. And then on the same time, they want to know what regulators are thinking, right? And how best to sort of ensure that obviously our system, is as robust and strong as it can be. One of the things that I remember, our previous experience from, JP Morgan, Jamie Dimon's, one of his quotes is that obviously, the American banking system is one of the strongest and most transparent and sort of resilient systems. And I think that, companies like JP Morgan Chase and other banks, if you will, that can both monitor legislation and regulatory policies that will affect them, have some ability to not just interpret those things internally, but to provide some perspective on how those policies or those proposals will impact their products and services and us as consumers, and to have a sort of constructive dialogue on the policy side with both regulators and policymakers and staff, candidates for office, to sort of provide those thoughts. Again, you hope that they'll sort of come see your way, but a good lobbyist, I would also say, would understand the other side's view. And so they, you know, an organization like JP Morgan Chase engages by having very involved executives that, you know, meet with, you know, regulators and policymakers, you know, on some frequency. You know, executives come to Washington or state capitals, you know, executives also are, you know, having conversations ongoing. In fact, I think even banks have regulators that sort of are embedded within their organizations for safety and soundness and audit purposes and all the things. It's multi-channel. There are lots of folks involved, not just in GR. So you may have one person involved that's sort of as a direct full-time employee, but, you know, they're obviously embedded within the organization and have resources of the organization that they can bring to bear. But on the political side, as it relates to sort of campaign finance contributions or sort of grassroots advocacy, as you know, Dawn, you know, our republic really comes down to, you know, volunteers, votes, and obviously money, and money in the sense where, you know, candidates have to be elected and reelected to stay in office. Also, depending on the structure of their caucuses, those candidates may also contribute to other members within their party structure to, you know, increase in rank and seniority. It's just part of the system. And so if a company is engaging in sort of the government affairs activities, one of the things that they can do, you may have heard the metaphor of the three-legged stool. So it's sort of lobbying, it's grassroots, and it's campaign finance, is they may also sponsor an affiliated political action committee where they can develop a structure where they can encourage, you know, a select group of employees or members to support the PAC with voluntary contributions. They would then aggregate that money, and then they would, separate from the policy space, they would engage in supporting these candidates' political campaigns because, you know, they're trying to support their champions, if you will, and they'd like to, you know, see those individuals, if they understand their issues and appreciate their perspectives, they'd like to keep them in office if those individuals should choose to do that. And they do that by supporting their campaigns.
All right. I want to make sure our listeners heard what I heard. These are not companies going into the company treasury, writing checks to political candidates who support legislation that is in the interest of the company. So it's not this raiding the corporate treasury. Tell us how some of the rules and parameters around how that works.
Yeah. So, you know, actually corporations, and I know there's actually a lot of debate about sort of dark money, as you will, but for the most part, companies have been barred in the U.S. from making direct contributions to federal candidates and many state candidates for well over 100 years. Starting in the 40s up and basically being codified in the 1970s, companies began to establish political action committees, which fast forward to today is the most regulated and transparent way for a company to engage in campaign finance. And essentially, there are a lot of rules in place in terms of how an organization can set it up. The PAC actually is legally a separate segregated fund, or that's what it's called. It's a separate entity. The corporation is allowed to pay for administrative costs, but to your point, they can't take money directly from its treasury funds and put it into the account. All it can do is pay for the compliance costs, and it can pay for some marketing costs. And then basically they can ask a select group, so not even all employees or members of an association would be eligible, but there's definitions about who would be eligible. There are rules about how you ask them and what you need to disclose to those individuals, how much you can request someone contribute. So the maximum contribution an individual can give to a corporate political action committee is $5,000 a year. That's a lot of money. But the average contribution that we find that employees that support a PAC give is roughly around $500 a year. So, you know, if you're doing it per paycheck, it's about $20 to $25 per paycheck. So that's on the raising of the money. Then on the spending of the money, when a PAC makes a contribution to a political campaign, not to the candidate directly, but to their campaign, I'm thinking of the federal candidates now, you know, all of that money has to be disclosed. So the PAC has to disclose through the Federal Election Commission, how much it raises and distributes. And candidates also have to report how much they raise and, you know, spend at the same time. And those are obviously separate reports. So through the Federal Election Commission, actually a company that has a political action committee could report this year, because of this election year, you know, upwards of 14 times. So, and all that information, of course, is made publicly available.
All right. So tell me, how does the landmark Citizens United case impact this world?
It's a great question. So it's a good soundbite for those that, you know, critique our system. And obviously there are mechanisms by which companies or associations can make contributions in a non-coordinated way with campaigns. But I would say that my experience now for at least, three cycles since the landmark Citizens United case came down, is that in particular, publicly traded companies are very, very suspect of this activity. They're at, I think, as part of this podcast or your series, you know, they take corporate responsibility, you know, very, very seriously, their reputation, their brands very seriously. And there's a lot of pain and thought that goes into the administration of their general government affairs activities, including the value and role of their PACs. Many are very, very skeptical or reticent right now from engaging in making direct contributions in a non-coordinated way to support or defeat a political campaign.
All right. So we've covered two legs of the stool. Tell us about the third.
Companies are made up of people. It's easy to attack companies per se, but if you think about it, again, I'm using the JP Morgan Chase example only because we work there and I haven't worked there in quite some time, but you know, it's 150,000 plus employees across the United States. It's a big community with lots of different voices and perspectives. And so, you know, I think what JP Morgan Chase tries to do is try to lead in terms of their overall corporate responsibility efforts, all the things that they do to be, you know, better neighbors, better, you know, members of the community, if you will. And so, you know, companies invest in lots of different programs to do better. And one of the things that they, you know, try to do is encourage at times their employees to be a voice. If there's some sort of policy issue, or well, frankly, now we're moving into election. And one of the great things that I've seen just as I go through my social media feed on Facebook or Instagram or, you know, in particular, is to see all these companies that are encouraging not just their employees, but also their customers to register and vote. And I think that's fantastic. So that's grassroots activity in its purest sense, right?
All right, Dan, you are not going to escape the show without answering the quintessential question. Corporations' engagement in the political process, what does it profit?
I am super proud of the work that I do. I'm really honored and humbled to work with large corporations and some small ones, and national trade associations. All of my interactions, both when I was working in my previous job and ones before that when I was running their political action committee programs, and my observations as a consultant and talking to many every day, particularly now during this election season, is that, you know, the amount of effort that, you know, individuals within the companies put to making sure that they align their government affairs programs with their internal ethics and their values, the social justice issues, for example, that have come up, that really sort of raised its profile in the spring. These are not lost on the government affairs teams of the companies that I work with, and how to navigate both the controversial topic of politics as well as the vector of social justice put into that as well. And from an ethical perspective, my constant observation is individuals within the legal teams, the HR teams, the executives that I interact with, the government affairs professionals, particularly the lobbyists, I mean, their credibility is their word, their honor. The amount of effort that they put to make sure that they engage in these activities in as transparent and structured a way as they can. The folks that I interact with are proud to participate in this. They enjoy the relationships that they're building with candidates and their staff and their executives on the inside, and they want to do it right.
Well, and later in this episode, we're going to lay to bear my own portfolio to see how my companies are doing. So that's a great segue. Dan, thank you for joining us on What Does It Profit?
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
We've been talking about how corporations are engaged in the political process, which is important to know. But for me as an investor, I want to understand how I'm participating vis-a-vis the investment I have in these companies. So I want to have this discussion with Gabe Risman of yourstake.org. Gabe, welcome to What Does It Profit?
Thanks so much for having me on, Dawn. Really happy to be here. I think it's a fantastic topic. And yourstake.org is very much focused on providing transparency into all the social impact of your investments, from health to environment to human rights to equal opportunity to accountability, which money in politics we think falls squarely under corporate accountability.
All right. Well, let's get right to this. Here I am, a lowly investor, and I'm at my financial advisor's office, and I'm asking for some help understanding. I mean, I understand the underlying economics of my portfolio, but what I don't understand is impact those investments are having. How does your tool work?
So our tool takes your portfolio and looks at all of the companies that you invest in, either directly or through a fund. And then we tell you what the impact of your company is along a whole range of issues. So actually, before the session today, you sent me an example portfolio that you have, and I'd be happy to go through that and talk through some of the things that you can learn as part of that impact report.
Actually, I'm a little bit frightened about what we're going to talk about, but let's do it.
Sure thing. So overall, your report and your portfolio turned out pretty good. Looks like you were in the second to top quartile compared to peers.
So what does that mean? So I'm like, I'm getting a C, or I'm getting a D minus, or?
Yeah, you're in the high C, low B range.
Okay.
And what that means is that you're a little bit better than peers, a little better than average. And across our major issue areas, there are a few highlights that I think are really fascinating that can lead to the score. So for context, what the report that we printed out and sent to Don shows is classic things like, how much am I invested in fossil fuel companies? And it also shows things like, how much are the companies in my portfolio contributing to the prison industry? Or it also looks at how much in fines are the companies in my portfolio paying to the US government for things like wage theft. So some interesting things that you might not know is in your portfolio, 3M actually was flagged for prison industry involvement because it has contracts with some prison organizations to supply materials that enable prison labor.
Oh my gosh. I think of them as post-it notes and masks. Here I am participating in private prisons. Gabe, I'm not sure I'm liking where this conversation is going, but let's keep at it.
Well, there's some good with the bad. 3M actually also has a really high number of environmental violations. But one positive note is the companies in your portfolio perform really well on LGBTQ equality and inclusion. And actually, every single company that you own directly has prohibited discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. And that actually became a law earlier this year that it's required for companies to prohibit this. But up until earlier this year, in some states, people could be fired based on their sexual orientation. And certain companies had specific policies prohibiting that. And your companies in your portfolio were leaders in that area.
Okay, well, that's a good one. Since today's conversation is about politics, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the accountability sector of your measures.
Of course. So one big accountability section is bribery, corruption, and fraud violations. And then after that, I'd love to get into the political spending part. So something that I'd love to highlight, because it's really relevant in the news, is that three companies in your portfolio in the pharmaceutical sector, Novartis, Johnson & Johnson, and Bristol-Myers Squibb, have paid tens or even hundreds of million dollars in fines for things like artificially inflated drug prices just last year. And over the last 5 years, pharma companies, including some of these in your portfolio, have also been charged for providing non-approved drugs, for false advertising, and for kickbacks to pharmacies for recommending their drugs over others.
Holy smokes.
So your stake, in some sense, provides all this information and transparency for you to know what's going on in your portfolio. And then we provide abilities for you to work with your financial advisor, or if you are a financial advisor, how to get into companies that are much more aligned with your values.
All right. So that's bribery, corruption, and fraud. What about transparency, political transparency, and voting support?
Yeah. So first, I can talk about the political transparency, voting support, and then we can get into the actual donations that some of the companies and funds in your portfolio are doing. So the problem that a lot of people have with money in politics is not just that there's money in politics, but that there's dark money in politics. So it's very hard to trace and know whether your company is actually aligned, not only with your values, but also with the company's publicly stated values and with whatever's in the best interest of shareholders.
So Gabe, when you're talking about dark money, this is corporate independent expenditures on behalf of candidates that they don't have to disclose?
Yeah, so candidate expenditures are disclosed, but a lot of times, a lot of the money is being funneled into organizations that don't have the same disclosure rules, whether that be trade associations or other organizations that are not direct candidate donations that have major implications on the political process.
So how do you get this information?
So we don't. That's the thing. There's a lot of shareholder proposals and really nonprofit campaigns that are trying to get companies to better disclose all the stuff that isn't required by law. So for example, if you're Vanguard or you're BlackRock or you're some big money manager, you have about almost 100 ballots on the table every year with the different companies in your portfolio. So you can vote to ask certain companies to disclose all of their political contributions, all of their political activity. And that's a major campaign that has actually gotten a lot of disclosure. So to be clear, every year companies have an annual meeting and shareholders are able to propose a particular issue that they want everyone to vote on. And a lot of times what that proposal is a proposal calling for greater corporate transparency and political spending. And mutual fund managers, these major money managers, wield a ton of influence, and they have the opportunity to vote and encourage these companies to be more transparent with their political spending and political activity. So that's something that we look at in the political transparency voting support. So you'll see that actually Vanguard and BlackRock and some of the major fund managers are very poor in their voting support. They almost never support increased transparency. But you also have some Parnassus funds, and Parnassus and a lot of the mutual funds that are focused on shareholder engagement or socially responsible investing, those oftentimes are voting in support of increased transparency and disclosure.
Okay, so then there's this other category, political spending disclosure score. How do those two work together?
So a lot of times, the votes are on companies with poor disclosure scores. So if you have a company that's not disclosing anything, then shareholders will put forward a proposal saying, hey, we want you to improve your transparency. And that's when mutual funds would vote to try to get these companies to improve their political spending disclosure scores.
Okay, so my portfolio is plus 46%. So that's slightly less than 50% of what's in my portfolio is pro-disclosure.
So that's saying that on average across your whole portfolio, your portfolio is 50% better than average on political spending disclosure.
Interesting.
So it's a bit better on average in terms of the status quo where things currently are. Your companies are disclosing more than average, but you are a little bit of a laggard in terms of pushing companies to go even further.
Okay, so if I get this information, what can I do about it?
So the main thing that you can do as an individual is talk to your financial advisor. Financial advisors oftentimes don't hear these questions from their clients, but when they do, there are opportunities for them to make a change. We, as YourStake, provide a solution for financial advisors to help you invest in companies that better align with your values. And if they use our solution, that's great, but if they don't, that's also fine. We really just want people to invest more impactfully and more aligned with their values. And step one is just bringing up these conversations with your financial advisor. If you are a financial advisor, feel free to reach out and we'd love to help. But most people listening probably just asking that first question, there are other companies and other mutual funds that have very similar characteristics that you can invest in that can better align with your values. And that's an important conversation to start.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, let's say company X scores poorly, but their underlying economic characteristics are similar to company Y. This tool that you offer financial advisors gives choices for swapping out that asset?
Exactly.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you the question I ask all of my guests. In the work that you're doing at yourstake.org, tell us how that work profits.
We started this business not even knowing that it would be a business. We knew that there was information that people really wanted about whether they were investing in things that they cared about or things that were antithetical and hypocritical to their values. And we decided to provide that information, and we now generate a profit ourselves to be able to be a sustainable business through subscriptions to financial advisors or asset managers and providing this information. We've seen already that when people do have this information and this transparency, they're able to take action to rectify the harms in their portfolios. And that is something that we want to continue to encourage. That there's that classic saying that you can manage what you measure. And that's something that we really believe in as a big theory of change.
Well, congratulations, and we wish you much continued success as you continue to aggregate this data and share it with those of us who want to take action. Gabe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you too, Dawn.
This is What Does It Profit? Links to resources related to the issues we've discussed in this episode are in the show notes. Transcripts, reading lists, and lists of our friends can be found at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. In our next episode, corporate law historian Adam Winkler.
It's always been about making money in America, and that while we talk about civil liberties and protection of minorities and dissent and fundamental rights, and those are important elements of the American experience too, you know, we're never far removed from capitalism.
In the meantime, please rate and review us on wherever you're listening, and let your friends know about the show. Quick sharing links can be found on our website. Ratings, reviews, and subscriptions on your favorite podcast platform mean so much to us. We would love to hear from you. Show ideas and comments are always welcome. Follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at WDIP Podcast. What Does It Profit? Is written and hosted by me, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. The show is produced by Jordan Gaspour. Executive producers are Nate Toby and Barbara Landis. And special thanks to our talented interns, Nate, Niels, Hannah, and Andrew, and our friends at Georgetown University's McDonough School of Business, the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor, Business for Impact, the Beck Center for Social Impact and Innovation, the DC Chapter of Conscious Capitalism, and Switchin' Board Studios. Before I let you go, let me remind you to never stop asking yourself, what does it profit?